Lecture 9, Maya Travelers.
This lecture continues the story we began in the last one, but it focuses on the activities of two men, the American lawyer turned traveler John Lloyd Stephens and the Scottish artist Frederick Catherwood, who traveled to the Yucatan in 1839 in a search for ancient civilization. This lecture tells the story of their adventures, of their visit to the ancient Maya cities of Copan, Palenque, Uxmal, and Chichen Itza. We analyze Stephen's best-selling books on his adventures, which created an image of the Maya which endured for generations. We also discuss Stephen's belief that Maya civilization developed from indigenous roots in the Mesoamerican lowlands without inspiration from outside. You'll recall, incidentally, that the word Mesoamerica is used to describe that area of Central America where pre-Columbian states developed. The Stephens and Catherwood expedition to the Maya lowlands brought professional travelers and an artist of international distinction to the Yucatan. This was the first time that people of this stature and experience, who had experience of other civilizations, came to the area. Both Stephens and Catherwood had traveled extensively in the Holy Land and up the Nile, visiting the major ancient Egyptian monuments. So they came there with a perspective, with experience, which enabled them to succeed where others had failed, because they had a tremendous credibility as a published author, a best-selling author, and as an artist whose shows had drawn large crowds. They had credibility as chroniclers of the past. John Lloyd Stephens is the best known of the couple. He was born in 1805 to a wealthy New York merchant's family. He trained for the law, was, by all accounts, a very fluent speaker, an expert at public address. Small wonder, therefore, that he dabbled in politics, in the rough and tumble of New York politics. But apparently, the exertions of campaigning caused him to get sick, so he abandoned politics and left for a long journey through Russia and Europe in 1835. Stephens must have been a very amiable, articulate man of considerable charm. He comes across from his writing as such a person. He certainly enjoyed his traveling. And he had this priceless gift of being able to express his feelings and his experiences on paper in a way that the reader felt that he was grabbing them by the hand and taking them on this long journey, which took him through Russia and Europe, often on very bad roads. His description of how he traveled through Russia in a cart with almost no springs really literally brings pain to your own behind. And from there, he began to develop an interest in the past. A subsequent journey took him traveling up the Nile, where he was captivated by the monuments of ancient Egypt. All the time he was traveling, he sent letters home describing his adventures to his family. These letters, in the Victorian custom, were passed hand to hand through distant relatives and inevitably ended up for a wider audience, and eventually they were published as a book, particularly after he had visited the desert city of Petra. Petra had on Stephens a profound effect, as it did on others. Petra is an extraordinary place. Many of you may remember it, having seen the Indiana Jones movies, where Indiana Jones, looking for, I think it's the Holy Grail, gallops out of the narrow defile that leads to Petra on a horse. Cool stuff. But if you go to Petra, and I beg you if you have the chance to go, walking through this narrow defile And then you come round, and suddenly in front of you is this temple facade glowing with a rosy-coloured rock, is one of the great and memorable experiences of archaeology. You'll recall that Austin Henry Layard, and he went there later than Stevens, was captured by the Bedouins, robbed, but eventually allowed to go free with none of his possessions. Stevens was somewhat more lucky, got a lovely description of the site, and developed an interest in archaeology almost overnight. His books on his travels, one on his Russian travels and the other one on Petra and Egypt, became bestsellers when he returned to New York. He had a fluency of style, an immediacy which stood out among the many travel books of the day. And he became a regular visitor to the store and publishing house of Harper's. There, he met the other compelling character in this story, Frederick Catherwood. Born in Britain in 1799, at the height of the Napoleonic Wars, a traveller, a very gifted artist. His artistry was so precise that some of his drawings of Maya ruins literally are as accurate as a photograph. Intricate detail, fine lines, executed often with a touch of romanticism, which of course for the period was commonplace. And he travelled widely in the Near East to the Holy Land and up the Nile, and he mounted several shows showing his pictures and these panoramas, which were so important and regular features of popular entertainment in the 19th century. The two men took an instant liking to each other. And it was through their meetings at Harper's Bookstore that they heard rumors of lost cities in the dense rainforests of Central America. Now today, you fly to Mexico City in a few hours. You can take a cruise to the Maya ruins on a luxurious cruise ship. But in those days, Belize, Guatemala, and Mexico were definitely off the beaten track. You got there by sailboat. You traveled to the Yucatan, a journey that would take weeks, and from there you took mules and very often literally cut your way into the rainforest. It was a remote world of decaying Spanish parishes and small farming villages, right off the beaten track. So it's small wonder that almost no details were known about these rumors that were circulating of Maya cities, and that being Viscount Kingsborough, who had published in England a series of monographs on the Maya glyphs, which he collected from various sources, which were so expensive that he was bankrupted and thrown into jail for debt. So there was an undercurrent of interest. There was Del Rio's accounts and so on, which people had read. There was something there, and ancient civilizations were very, very much in the wind. They were things that people were talking about. In the modern vernacular, there was a buzz about them. So clearly here, there was an opportunity for fame, but above all, for a book and for pictures. And the two men teamed up, and by all accounts, it may have been more Catherwood's idea than Stevens. And in 1839, they set off in search of Maya civilization. They arrived at present-day Belize City, where they met the British consul, who was a Napoleonic War veteran, and set off by mule train deep into the jungle. And in November 1839, they came to the ruins of the Maya city of Copan, one of the great cities of the Maya, one of the great kingdoms of the Maya, whose ruins at this time was smothered in dense forest. Nearby was the homestead of a local farmer, the only person there and the site itself was completely deserted. It was across a river. A wall could be seen across the river. The next morning, the farmer guided them across, and they found themselves in dense rainforest. The only sounds that disturbed the quiet of this buried city were the noise of monkeys moving among the tops of the trees and the crackling of the dead branches broken by their weight. They wandered, and Stevens wrote, "The city was desolate. No remnant of this race hangs around the ruins in traditions handed down from father to son and from generation to generation. It lay before us like a shattered bark in the midst of the ocean." One of the most superbly evocative bits of archaeological writing ever penned. And he wrote it after wandering, literally intoxicated, through a buried city landscape. There is a site in Guatemala called Naranjo. It's close to the great city of Tikal, which is a common tourist destination. And it's barely been investigated. And the site still has not really been cleared. And I vividly remember going there with an archaeologist. And we walked through the forest, and above us was the canopy. And we were walking in an open space. There wasn't much undergrowth. And on each side, there were hills vanishing up into the trees. And I realized after a couple of minutes that these were in fact the base of large pyramids. And we scrambled up the loose earth through the stucco and the remnants of glyphs and emerged at the summit. And as we came to the summit, we burst through the trees into the sunshine. And you looked across, and literally at your eye's height was the top of the forest canopy. This, as one book on the Maya put it about 10 years ago, was a forest of kings. And just for a moment, as I wandered in literally this buried city, not buried under soil, but buried under forest, I felt just the way that Stevens and Catherwood had. The only difference was that there were no monkeys, but the vegetation was dry and it was quiet. And as we walked, we came across a couple of stone-carved uprights lying horizontally in the soil, almost overgrown, bearing upon them the depictions of the rulers of Naranjo hundreds of years ago. So even today, there are Maya cities which have not been excavated, not cleared, rarely if ever visited, where you can re-experience this extraordinary moment that Stevens and Catherwood had. Catherwood sat down and started sketching. And he sketched the stela, the uprights where the kings recorded, the Maya lords recorded their deeds, their accessions, their deaths and their lives. And he sketched day after day, ankle deep in mud, with mosquitoes torturing the whole time, and often contracting fever. In the meantime, Stevens wrote his description of Copan and tried to buy the site from the local farmer. He wanted to dismantle parts of it and exhibit it in New York, realizing rightly that this would cause a sensation. He bought Copan for the princely sum of $50. But the deal fell through because it was not possible to find an easy way to transport the ruins or parts of the ruins by water down to the Caribbean. From Copan, Stevens and Catherwood traveled to Palenque, visited by Del Rio and Caddy and Wright and Wood. And there he really began to understand what this civilization meant. He realized, looking at the figures, that some of them bore a remarkable resemblance to the appearance of modern Maya peoples living in the vicinity of Palenque. And he concluded, having sat in the temples, reading a newspaper by a firefly light, pondering the ruins as he wandered up pyramids and through small, cramped temples, the Maya never had arches. And while Catherwood sketched that Maya civilization was an indigenous phenomenon, which had a distinct, separate, and indigenous existence, to quote him. This was an enormously important conclusion, and a conclusion remarkable for a man who was a popular travel writer, because it dismissed anything exotic. And basically it said, look, this civilization was built by indigenous Americans. It, without him saying it, is fully competitive in its elaboration, its exoticness, its sophistication, with anything known from the old world. It is an indigenous achievement. This conclusion has sustained Maya civilization and the study of Maya civilization ever since. There are still those who have bees in their bonnets and insist that Maya civilization was built by Egyptians or Phoenicians or even ancient astronauts. But to anyone who has closely examined the glyphs and the monuments with their distinctive architecture, such arguments are sheer, unadulterated nonsense. And one of the greatnesses of John Lloyd Stephens was that he recognized this fact, that Maya civilization was a brilliant indigenous achievement. They returned to New York in 1840. And immediately, John Lloyd Stephens sat down and wrote his first book on the Maya. It was called, in the classic 19th century verbose manner, Incidents of Travel in Central America, Chiapas, and Yucatan. No mention of Maya. And it appeared in 1841 and became a bestseller at once. It had everything. It had appealing writing style. It had vivid verbal portraiture. It had some charming pictures by Catherwood. It introduced an exotic, mysterious civilization. And there were lovely vignettes of the local people, of the local characters, of the attempts to buy Copan for $50. The sort of ingredients that make for a wonderful, wonderful adventure, which you can enjoy sitting in an armchair. Stephens was a genius at writing this. But he also included in it the first detailed descriptions of Maya ruins. But what gave all this even additional stature were the displays of Catherwood's drawings and his portfolios, which, while somewhat romanticized, were astoundingly detailed and gave accurate depictions of the sites, the stelae, and the local people. And just like the Description de l'Egypte, written by Napoleon Savant, the Maya burst on public consciousness with a loud intellectual thunderclap, because even one glance at Catherwood's drawings showed that this civilization was quite unlike the Greeks or the Romans or the Egyptians. It was a absolutely indigenous development, with its own distinctive art and architecture. This, visually and verbally, was the greatest achievement of Catherwood and Stephens. First book was a bestseller. In 1841, as it appeared, Stephens and Catherwood embarked on a second journey to the Yucatan to carry out further researches. They were accompanied by a young physician called Samuel Cabot, whose main interest apparently was hunting. Today, he would never be allowed to go on another expedition. He would be out on a multi-city promotion tour selling his books. And if he was as articulate as he appears to have been, he might even be making a course for the teaching company. But in those days, you went out and did it again. And he went out, and this time they concentrated on the northern Yucatan. They'd been there briefly at the end of their first expedition, and they realized quite rightly there was a great deal more to see. This is where the later Maya ruins are. And they spent 6 weeks at Uxmal, arguably the most magnificent of all Maya cities, rivaled only by Copan and Tikal. And here they mapped and they surveyed and they drew. Because now they were getting more serious about the archaeology. They were being a little more systematic. They weren't systematic by modern standards, but clearly at this point the challenge was to give a more precise picture of large Maya ruins. Catherwood painted and drew some of his most magnificent works here. He paid particular attention to a building called the Governor's Palace, which is adorned with a finely cut mosaic of sculptured stones. His objective was to produce a precise record of this building. And in fact, his drawings of Uxmal offered a unique and timely look, not only at Maya art and architecture, but also showed that they were both quite distinct from any Egyptian or other Mediterranean civilization. This journey, in its way, was more important than the first, simply because they spent more time looking at the sites. From Uxmal, they went to another center at Qabar, and here Stevens was ethically indefensible. He raided Indian cemeteries for their skulls, because at this time there was a great deal of interest in North America as to the ancestry of Native Americans, and he acquired these skulls for the purposes of comparative research into the skeletal anatomy of ancient Maya compared with that of North American Indians. There was at the time a great debate in North America over the attribution of the earthworks in eastern North America, which many people considered that the Indians were incapable of building, and that these mounds and earthworks had in fact been built by long-vanished ancient civilizations from Egypt and elsewhere. And part of the debate around this surrounded the anatomy of the Indians, so he raided some cemeteries. Not a nice thing to do. And from Qabar, they went on to Chichen Itza, one of the great Maya ruins, where it is thought there is strong Toltec influence from the highlands. It was a site that was already famous for its truncated pyramid, now known as the Castillo, and for its mysterious ball court. If you look behind me here, you can see Catherwood's picture of the Castillo. Romanticized, but a lovely portrait. Today, of course, the site has been cleared for tourists and appears more finished. Here again, Catherwood excelled himself with detailed drawings of Maya architecture, with sun and shadow chasing over the glyphs, which were so exotic and complicated and quite unlike anything known from Egypt or Mesopotamia. They also realized that Maya civilization had deep roots, not only in the past, but in the present. For example, Stevens became convinced, having been to Chichen Itza, that there were so many resemblances between this site and other large Maya cities that Maya civilization, he believed, had been basically unified over the entire Central American lowlands. He thought in terms of a large, relatively homogeneous civilization. Of course, he had no means of dating the sites. He had no means of knowing which was earlier than the other, because he hadn't done any excavation, and even if he had, there was no means of dating them. In fact, modern research has shown that Maya civilization, in fact, was very far from homogeneous. It was a mosaic of small city-states like Tikal, Palenque, Copan, which constantly fought with each other or engaged in a complicated game of diplomatic monopoly. One would become more powerful at the expense of another. A great city would sink into obscurity, while a dynasty at another city would achieve much greater power. It was a very volatile, ever-changing civilization, which was unified only in the most general terms and in the terms of general religious beliefs. Stevens, determined to find out more about the Maya, spent a lot more time on this trip befriending local scholars and priests. Many of these people had spent their ample leisure time studying little-known historical accounts of Uxmal by early travelers, early European travelers. For example, a local historian named Don Pio Perez shared with Stevens his studies of the Maya calendar, derived from old Maya documents in government archives. Perez's work was of considerable importance because he'd compiled a far more complete version of the Maya calendar than Diego de Landa had done centuries before. And he had also established that there were cycles of 52 years, which constantly rotated in the Maya calendar, and that there were two intermeshing calendars, like gear wheels, a secular and a religious one. And all this data was accumulated in Stevens' notebooks. And in 1842, they returned to New York, almost getting drowned in a storm, because travel at sea in those days was still very risky. And in 1843, in the same year as William Prescott's great conquest of Mexico, Stevens' second book, Incidents of Travel in Yucatan, appeared. This book, like its predecessor, became an immediate bestseller. Like Layard's second book on Nineveh, it was a more mature work, the result of a great deal more thinking and pondering over the significance of Maya civilization. In it, Stevens set down his thinking on the ancient Maya. He concluded that sites like Palenque and Uxmal were the work, and I quote, of the same races who inhabited the country at the time of the Spanish conquest. He was surprised, however, by the lack of oral tradition about the ruins. When he asked the local villagers living nearby what they knew of the sites, they knew nothing. They had just been there ever since they could remember. He blamed this on the bloodthirsty policies of the King of Spain and the Catholic Church, which had destroyed all traces of indigenous customs and beliefs. A year later, Frederick Catherwood published his Views of Ancient Monuments in Central America, Chiapas, and Yucatan, 25 now very rare lithographs of sites and people, all that remained after the New York fire destroyed many of his drawings. And with this, the chronicle of Maya civilization by these two great travelers was complete. Catherwood and Stevens were giants of 19th century archaeology, although they were not really archaeologists. They were travelers and travel writers, remarkable not only for their fine narratives and drawings, but also for the sobriety of their conclusions. Both of them believed that Maya ruins were the work of indigenous Native Americans, and they shared this belief with an enormous popular audience. This wasn't necessarily a popular conclusion in an era when racism and slavery were rife, because there was common doctrine that Indians were inferior to any civilization from the Old World. So this was quite a bold conclusion, but it is a conclusion that has never, never been challenged. And thereby is the greatness of these people. And it's no coincidence that John Lloyd Stevens's books are still in print. The rainforest was low-lying and hot and fever-ridden. 40 years were to pass before any more scientific work was done on the sites the true travelers had visited. But their researches ensured that the ancient Maya would never again vanish into their former oblivion. In the next lecture, we'll go back to the Near East and go to the Holy Land and look at excavations under the streets of Jerusalem, the first forays into biblical archaeology.